Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
When I was a boy in my mind, the road was mine, trees was mine, coca plum was mine, 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 mine. When I get the urge, then I will go over the hill, then down below, turn left, then I would be on the road to my cocoa plum tree. I saw mine blocked off the road to my cocoa plum. I saw mine then blocked off the road to my cocoa plum. Some people say they need more school there. They say they need another place. Only one thing wrong with this disease. Nobody get permission from me. Nobody get permission from me. I saw mine that block off the road.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday.
The 14th of March, 2024.
Thank you very much. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today. The other day, I was walking on East Bay Street. Mm-hmm. No, that was actually West Bay Street, but parts of East Bay Street too. And I was noticing that the number of the shorelines that I grew up with has disappeared. The environment and the landscape has changed. Once there was a residential area of the Grove, right, of West Bay Road. There was residential areas. Now they seem to just change the whole area to commercial areas. There's hotels. There's Airbnbs. There's buildings and shops. And I said, nobody asked me if they could change these things. How come I can't complain? Who am I to complain about what I grew up with? This is not the environment I wanted. Right? So I said, let me see if I could get some environmentalists to come on and explain my rights. Can I complain? Is there any kind of concern about the environment with all these high rises being built up? Right? I actually have some people here from the Say No to the Win development campaign. I said, let me invite them to join me because they are concerned about the environment on West Bay Street too, because West Bay Street is changing. They're building some new high-rises next to people's houses, right? And I said, do those people have rights? Do those people have a right to complain, to agitate, to say, man, no, this ain't what I want. But I have some people on Zoom also. I have Dr. I always have a problem. I always call him Lino, right? Anselino. Go ahead. You know how to pronounce that name?
Dr. Anselino Davis.
How can you pronounce that so easily?
Because that's my boy.
Yes.
It just takes practice. I mean, we learn how to say Tchaikovsky.
I know how to say Tchaikovsky.
You could try. You try again.
And
you
just keep practicing. And I also have Miss Gail Woon, right? Who's in Grand Bahama, actually, right? And her whole life is about the environment and environment tech. Technology and aquaculture, you know, and
oceanography.
See, look at that. See, I know she's going to be coming quickly. I know the whole environment she tends to be an advocate for. And I said, I'm going to invite her to explain what things I should be looking for. But before all of that,
hold on, wait.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Miss Woon.
I'm here, man, too. Nah,
no, you're from Nassau. Use Driftwood, Dr. Davis. Use Driftwood.
No. He belonged to Grand Bahama.
He belonged to Grand Bahama. Go ahead, Erin. I want to introduce the publicist.
Go on. I just wanted to ask her if she studies mosquitoes.
Oh.
Somebody needs to study mosquitoes.
And I also want to introduce the publicist.
Mosquitoes that study us.
See, there you go. I want to introduce a publicist for the Say No to the Wind development campaign also, which is Miss Azalita Ishmael Nuri.
Good morning.
Yes. And I want her to explain what is the entire campaign, what is it all about? And then you can reintroduce our guests in terms of what concerns you have about the environment and all these big high sky rises type things.
And the song. Who wrote the song? Who's singing the song? And where can I find a copy of the song just for documentation purposes?
Yeah, let's do all that. Go ahead.
Okay, good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Gail and Ancelino and Bahamas. Thank you for listening in. So I have been in a couple of decades now, and I was approached by, I'm a publicist. You're probably familiar with my work with Jamaro, the artist, and Rise Bahamas, Protecting for Women and Children, and so on. So I was asked to first do an ad for Mr. Hoffer. He lives next door to the new proposed development. So for almost 4 years, their family had to deal with dust and a lot of other problems, air pollution, damage to their foundation of their home, and so on. When I got more involved with the town planning and the EIA, I got angry as a Bahamian. I've done work for developers before, but there's just a whole different synergy with this particular group. And we don't need any more high rises on that small strip of beach on Goodman's Bay. Now, Mr. Nuri alluded to it was residential. Yes, it was residential. I have been seeing, and other people have been seeing around the island, is all of a sudden you turn around and there are meetings and your residential area is disappearing. It's being turned to commercial. So that strip is called Golf Course Estates, and it's almost 100 years old. And as you know, there were a few houses on it. And so in 2018, there was something called the La Playa Ordinance. I'd never heard of it until I went to the meeting. And that ordinance changed that whole area from the first house, which is on the parking lot, which is the eastern parking lot. That's La Playa. That belongs to the government. That's under development right now for something. And then it goes down to the end of the strip, which almost joins before Seaview Drive. The La Playa ordinance rezoned that area to commercial and 380 feet past Seaview Drive. That had me questioning, what's there? Well, that's the house that's on the bend. And a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, they wanted to have that for a restaurant. And the residents in the Grove said, no way. So we've got all three. So why say no to wind? Well, we're asking you to say no to the Wind 2 penthouses that's supposed to be proposed 14 stories high.
14 stories high?
14 stories high. You need 60 parking spots for a building that high. We already know that the Goldwyn Resort doesn't have enough parking that they park in Goodman's Bay. I'm painting the picture of what's along that strip, because if we have more high-rises going up, where's all this parking going to go? Office of the Prime Minister can't support it anymore. Goodman's Bay Financial Center can't support it anymore, and they've been parking in Goodman's Bay.
Now, when you say a 14-story complex would need 60 parking spots, is that a requirement by law? Because I imagine that a 14-story complex may need more than 60 parking spots.
They ain't talking about staff. Staff got to find their own parking space. We're talking about that for the building.
So according to the architects I've spoken to, I think the formula is 1.5. How do you do 1.5 parking
right,
spots?
Right, 1.5 per unit, right?
Yeah, per unit.
So, I mean, at the root of it, the protocols for and the standards for these sorts of developments, they don't seem realistic,
no.
Right? They don't seem to align with actual communal needs.
Mm-mm. No. So I want the Bahamian people, I want all concerned citizens to understand that I believe the future of Goodman's Bay is at risk because we fought for that 25 years ago. This generation needs to step up. We're getting older. The next generation needs to step up. Our kids need to step up and say, no, this is our space. We don't have recreation space left for us. Our beaches are being taken away. Access is being taken away. Some developers are awesome. I have a good developer I work with. Some developers are bullies, and I feel we're being bullied here. So there doesn't seem to be compassion for the neighbor next door, the man who and his family who has to put up with the noise every single day. And we don't need, like I said, a dangerous corner. People have been killed at that corner. Very, very dangerous corner. So the no, the Say No to Wind 2 campaign was developed to bring attention to the environment impact assessment.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it was a lot of fluff. So I'm really happy that you have some environmental experts here to talk about coastal erosion, talk about air pollution, talk about the beaches.
Before we transition to them, where can we find the EIA for the Goldwyn Phase 2? It's the penthouse condo development.
Okay. So a website was set up called www.saynoto2win.com. So the campaign is called No Win, hashtag No Win.
Can you repeat that?
Yes. Say no to win, WYNN.com. If you go to the website, you'll get a landing page. There are two PSAs there. PSA 1 says, say no from the Ministry of Works Town Planning. It explains what's important about the campaign. There's a second PSA, which is, it talks about our rights. And there's an amazing song done by Brother Greg called, you asked about it, Aaron, Road to My Cocoa Plum. So that song is about a young boy who, you know, free life. We talked about this. We're losing our rights. You know, he likes to go down the road to pick his cocoa plums. And one day he turns the corner and boom, no access, hotels going up. So he says, why you block the road to my cocoa plum? I didn't give you permission. So, you know, we talked about permission.
Yes. So, one more thing.
So just want the audience to know, and I would like Gail Boone and Dr. Lino to know, what are our rights as stakeholders when it comes to the environment? So at the EIA, they said, if we want to say no or if we have any concerns, we write in. And we are very transparent. All your answers will go to the Fight Win campaign. It'll go to the environment. It will go to DEP, Department of Environment Planning and Protection. All transparent.
Let me go to Ms. Woon first. Gail Woon, you there?
Yes.
Good. I heard they mentioned EIA. I'm not sure what that is. And I heard they mentioned town planning. I'm not sure what they do. Can you give me like a brief synopsis for my listening audience also so they can understand these terms and how it, this overall conversation?
Yes. EIA stands for Environmental Impact Assessment. And every big development, I think possibly small developments might have to do them as well, but they're a big document, usually over 100 pages. And they have people like Keith Bishop from Islands by Design. They make environmental impact assessments, which cover everything you could imagine, the seafloor, the land, the birds, the fish, what's going to be done with the waste, any kind of impact, noise impact, all those things are put into the, so each EIA should give the reader a total picture of what's going to happen when the project happens, what things will be impacted, what things will be lost, what things won't be lost. So a really well-done EIA should have all those things in there and should be contributed by various entities like biologists, geologists, engineers, all those kinds of people should be adding to each part of the environmental impact assessment document.
And go ahead.
You had another question.
Yes, and I was saying town planning, what's their involvement in the EIA in this whole process?
I can't answer that. Dr. Leno might be able to answer that. I know town planning has to help review EIAs, as does the Department of Environmental Planning and Protection. But as far as what town planning does is specifically, I don't know.
So go ahead.
Sorry, I think it's the site approval. So they give the site approval, And I think when they give that site approval, then Goldwyn or Goldwyn Development, they get to go ahead and start doing what they're supposed to do, and then Department of Environment Planning comes in. But we will let Dr. Davis answer that.
Dr. Davis, before you start, I'm thinking 14 stories. This, I mean, when I hear 14 stories, and I'm picturing a whole monstrosity type building in a residential area. What type? I mean, you're an environmentalist, right? Should we be concerned about such things?
So when you talk about these developments, I think one of the sad things about the way people go about life is we only see what's right in front of us and what's visible. And I think with the environmental impact assessments, we have to recognize that a 14-story building also needs quite a bit of stuff underground as well. And the water, for example, in that area, Mr. Boleg from Water and Sewage, or when he was at Water and Sewage, he actually did a report around there, and it said that you could find the groundwater, you know, just 5 feet below the surface of the soil. We know how that area floods when it rains heavily, and it changes every time you add more construction, more pavement. The water can't get down like we need it to. So any development that they do inside there that's going to increase the cemented footprint and then go down into the ground below those sites, that's going to change that as well. And to get back to the point of what town planning does.
One second, Dr. Davis.
Yes.
Nuri referenced the 14-story dynamic. When I went to the website, they also made mention of underground or subterranean parking. Is that even viable in that location?
Personally, I'm not an architect, but inside that area, I would not want to park my car below ground level. And just thinking about the safety, when we talk about sustainability with our environment, we're not just thinking about day to day, you know, Monday to Friday, you go to work, you come back. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about, you know, next 5-10 years, we're going to have a major storm, right? If you look back over the past, you know, Jean, Francis, Joaquin, Dorian, these storms will come through the Bahamas. So you are someone who's, you know, scheduling this out and say, oh, we're going to have 300 Bahamians hired for X amount of years, and then we're going to have 30 Bahamians. And you balancing that, they're balancing their budget. They're getting their money in their time frame. But we're going to have to deal with whatever they do there in perpetuity. The islands of the Bahamas took, you know, thousands, millions of years to make, to get to where they are. So every time you dig something out of the ground or you ruin a piece of these coral islands that we live on, it's not going to come back after you make your money.
Miss Goon, I'm afraid of the beach. I'm afraid of the beach just disappearing. I'm walking that West Bay Street, especially that John Canoe Beach area. When I was young, I could just walk into the water. Now it's like a 15-foot drop. All the sand gone. The sand gone. And I'm concerned, can these buildings have an impact on the beach?
The area you're speaking about, is there a seawall there built? Well, because I'm not from Nassau.
Well, there is a seawall, but every so often the ocean come and take it down and they got to build it again.
Mm-hmm. So the problem with seawalls, and I've been telling people this and no one listens, is that when you put in a seawall, you guarantee that your beach will be taken away by the ocean. You're guaranteed that in 50 years, you're only going to have rocks there. Because what happens is physics, you have an equal and opposite reaction. So every winter when you get the big waves coming in and they hit that wall and they bring all that sand back out away, it takes it all back out to the ocean, you know, far away from where the beach used to be. Now, the beach sand is going to come back in the summer, but not as much as it was before you put up that seawall. So everywhere, y'all in New Providence love them seawalls. You put them everywhere. You're causing your beach to go away. And unfortunately, Grand Bahama has followed suit and put seawalls in Williamstown and Smith's Point and all those areas. I'm watching the beach go away every year, every winter.
But I thought seawalls were good. That's what our governments do. We build seawalls to protect us, eh?
No. Seawalls help cause beach erosion. It's called physics. It's a law of physics.
The issue is that all of those buildings are built on the sand dune. So you go to Cat Island, Rumkey, Ragged Island, you will be in a swale, a low area, and then there's a dune that rises up before you get to the ocean. And you have native vegetation, sea oats, some sea purslane and stuff on those. Human beings say, oh, I don't want to have to walk over the sand or look over this hill for me to see the ocean. I want to plant my building right on this dune that God, nature, the universe, whatever you want to say, put there. And in our hubris, we want to go and be where, you know, the ocean say you ain't supposed to be there. And so when you go and put your stuff there, then the ocean come and try to take it. So then you build a seawall. But the seawall, all the regular rocks and seagrass that slow down those waves normally. And we have people studying that at University of the Bahamas, oceanography. We have students who are discussing this in class right now, but unfortunately, they're not the decision makers yet. And this is where I think we need to start moving towards getting people educated, like this show that we're having today, for public education, but also formal education, so that people could look at these EIAs and say, no, that don't make sense.
To get a good sense of what the experts are talking about, I found this report. It's entitled Final Field Study Report, Social Response to Climate Change, Sea Level Rise on the Bahamas, and it was produced by a group from the University of Hamburg in 2016. I just want to read quickly from the summary of that report. It says, coastal protection is not a centrally organized effort to maintain the coastline, but rather a vast amount of small and smallest committees and or actual individuals taking care of small areas. This means that not the entire coast is protected, but rather just small patches. This patchy coastal protection can actually damage or destroy coastal areas around it due to changed currents and winds, right? And they go on to suggest that as opposed to these small silo efforts, that we need a national, a program coordinated at a national level to ensure that one small project isn't causing a negative impact on another small project or another area around it.
But it's a domino effect.
Right.
It's a domino effect along the whole coast. And Gail can probably let you know. We talked about this before. What you do here will affect all the way down the coastline.
Right. And if people who are working on their individual project are required to take into account impact of their development or their attempt to protect beyond a particular boundary.
Let me just add before back in. So I think that same report I read, and in it, I can't remember if Neil Seeley, the geographer, mentioned it or if it came from the report.
But he contributes to the report.
Right.
Yes.
So they talk about seawalls. So what Goldwyn wants to do is if their final project, phase two, gets to go ahead, they're going to lock in this new seawall to their existing seawall, right? So water finds its lowest point. And you do not need to get permission from your neighbor about the seawall you're putting up, according to that report. Mm-hmm. So that means when the surges come in and it's hitting those walls, it's going to go where? Mr. Hoffa's property.
And the property other properties. Further down.
The other thing I'd like to mention is you talked about parking. So if you go into Goldwyn Resorts, do you realize you're walking up an incline? So they built up. They built their up. That first story, I think, is where the cars park. I think that's what they're proposing in the 14-story building. We couldn't get an answer in town planning or in the EIA. How high are you elevating the land? And the building is only 6 feet away at certain points. from the neighbor.
I know in my neighborhood, when my neighbor built up, because we are prone to flooding, all the water ran down to my house. So I'm not sure if this building up is a good thing.
Well, I had the same thing across the street. My neighbor, the yacht designer, built the driveway. I had to put in a ditch because the land gets eroded.
But I want to ask Dr. Davis, West Bay Street, I mean, that particular area is prone to flooding. I mean, anytime you have a heavy squall, king tide. The ocean is in the road. You can't drive past at all. So I'm thinking now, if they do more construction, especially building a 14-story building, how will that impact that area where it's prone to flooding?
Yeah, so you have two things. You're taking stuff away from the environment that's naturally there, and you're adding things to the environment that's not naturally there. So if you look inside their environmental impact assessment, they actually have mapped out areas of seagrass that are in front of their property. They want their guests to be able to go and snorkel and swim inside that area. And some people, they want to pay to come to the Bahamas, but not touch or interact with anything that naturally occurs in the Bahamas. So they just want it to be white sand in the front there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you don't have seagrass to protect the coast. Now you don't have the native animals in there. But you dig out that patch, and it's going to also mess up all the seagrass nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Then you build up these cement structures. The water that would have percolated into the ground at that site now cannot go inside that ground. So it has to spread itself out around the area nearby. And so what might have been, you know, 2-3 inches of water before, now in that area, it might have to go up another half inch, right? And this is, you know, salt water along with brackish water. And so all of the behaviors are going to drive past that area for work, for school, all the traffic and stuff. You have to deal with that in New Providence. Right? You're going to have to deal with that.
I mean, I got to deal with that.
My feet ain't going to get wet on the 11th floor. My feet ain't going to get wet on the 3rd floor or the 4th floor. Your tires and your feet, maybe the bottom of your car. Yeah.
But you ain't going to be inside that building in the first place. I'm just saying.
2.5 million condo.
Sir, let me crack the jokes about privilege, please. So here's a question for both of you. Can you describe the primary or most essential or most important geographic or ecological features of that area, and then what concerns need to be answered in terms of the environmental impact, social and economic impact?
You got ladies first, Gail?
Well, you've got the wildlife habitat, as well as the marine habitat, the ocean habitat. And I'm a fan of both of them. I'm an avid birder, as Dr. Davis knows, and I'm also a marine biologist by training.
You say we need to worry about the birds too?
Yes, because when they take that, all those trees that have berries and flowers that the birds eat from and they build their nest in, that whole entire habitat where that 14-story building is no longer a habitat for wildlife. That's a habitat for tourists or humans or whatever you call them. But it's no longer a viable habitat for wildlife.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned the sea life in general. And I see I have callers coming in right now, so I just want to make sure I'll be aware. But the sea life also, it's off the ocean. It's on the land. What concerns is there about the sea life?
Well, first of all, you've been talking about them building or rebuilding a seawall. So that's going to have an impact, as well as the EIA claims that there will be no impact to the ocean area at all.
You mean like, pardon me, one second. I haven't seen the EIA myself. When you say at all, did they say there'd be zero impact?
From what I read, yes, it said there will be no impact to the ocean site. But I'm not sure how much faith I can put in the EIA, because on page 33, they have a picture of a white peacock butterfly, and they've said it's a monarch butterfly. Or if they know stuff about what they're talking about.
I mean, okay, so
if they cannot identify a butterfly.
They haven't even talked about the turtles in the bay. There's turtles in the bay.
We have a caller on the line, but all I could think about is, how do you capture the runoff from your cement production and your cement use? Like, how do you capture that water to ensure that it doesn't run into the ocean?
I like that.
Yes, ma'am. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Erin.
Morning,
sir. Good morning, Mr. Nuri, and good morning to all your guests.
Good morning.
Yeah, these impacts upon these development, when they tell you to write in, it's only basically fluff, because when the government has made a decision to do this sort of stuff and give these approvals, they don't really concern themselves about the neighbors or whatever the zoning is for the environment. It's all about commercial. Remember now, today makes 16 months since the 14th of November, 2022, since I wrote to the Director of Investment Office. And that's on the, that's basically a straight up right that I had to do. They haven't responded as yet. With the Pittstown development in Crooked Island, with my 23-acre, 700-foot of beachfront properties. But you all have to understand, all the work that you all are doing is the correct sort of stuff to fight for the environment and to fight for the rights of what people are doing when it comes to government only giving approvals to people them to try and get economic benefits.
Thank you very much, caller. Is it too late, Ishmael Nuri?
No. What I want to say is I want to let everyone know that we're stakeholders in this. We're every citizen who lives here, or everybody who lives here, we're the government. Look, this is the voice of the people. And you're absolutely right. We need to let our voices known. And if we write, it's on record. What can they do if it's not on record? Then it just gets approved. Let's show them that we have a voice and that we are the stakeholders. Yes, economic power is what is the government has, but the people have a voice.
Right, and if you believe that the government is ignoring the voices of the people documented in the contributions right through the process, then what you do is you keep your receipt of the email sent. Mm-hmm. And as an organization, you publish all of the contributions to that discussion for the public to see that an effort was made.
But I want you to know, we have these fights all around with different projects, but the developer and the consultant has to answer your question. So ask your question.
They have to answer our question?
They have to answer it. They have to put it in a report, and everybody who supplies an email address will get that report.
And in fact, the bulk of the work isn't making the initial submission. It's being prepared to respond to the answer.
Yes.
We have another caller there.
Allocated way as well. These social impacts, the economic impacts, this $100 million Bahamian dollars that they're talking about over the life of this project. And then you have the 300 Bahamians who can be working those construction jobs. So while you have some folks who own property on that Cable Beach Strip who are going to be affected, that, in my opinion, doesn't equate to the amount of Bahamians who go to Goodman's Bay, use it recreationally, or as just, you know, daily Bahamians, or who work there.
Surely they get to learn to share. They got to learn to share.
Yeah, you get. Anyway, let's go to the caller. Yeah. I was about
you
to.
You have to buy your shares first.
Oh, God.
Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Erin. Good morning, CA. Good morning, your guests and studios. You know, I have to right now say that I have to basically, before I speak, I actually have to slow my mind down. Let me first, out the gate, let me first congratulate both you, Erin, and CA, for bringing guests into your studios over the past few weeks to talk to the Bahamian people, not about only their rights, but also to be cognizant of their environment, mm-hmm. of what we have to deal with in this country. Because I'm going to tell you, right now, what your guest is speaking to is actually an educational process that a lot of us would not get in school. I have to encourage every guest going forward that you bring to your show to some way, somehow, you know, form a grouping where persons can come and actually hear directly from you guys, exactly based upon your experience, what we look in regard to these things, such as construction, such as the impacts that an area that you may want to invest in, such as a home or apartments or whatever, what kind of assessments and what kind of things we should be looking for as the development happens, what's going to be impacted, and what is going to be the end result once we would have bought into what it is that you guys are speaking to, mm-hmm. what our responsibilities will be afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of persons do not understand or have not even factored in. And like I said, I'm enjoying this conversation so much because it has really opened my mind. You know, when you change the natural aesthetics of an area, you're actually impacting the general and the natural vegetation and the environment of that area. And my mind goes instantly on when you apply concrete onto a place that is natural, because then now you're now disturbing the natural flow of water, the natural flow of vegetation along that area. I heard your guest say that she's an avid bird watcher, which means that the natural birds and bees and everything is impacted. And these are things that we take for granted. You know, the birds are responsible for removing seeds from one place and depositing them in other areas of the island where vegetation may not even exist. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that developers are doing an excellent job on informing the persons who are buying into the areas what they have removed, how it's going to impact the persons buying into their areas, what will have to be the end result for that person then to have to invest in. And I know that my voice tends to get a little long with these things because I'm passionate, but the one point here is that, you know, the educational system, and I'll always point back to this, we do not have sufficient people in our educational system to actually talk about these things, teach these things, so we are a better informed citizens mm-hmm. To help build this Bahamas. And mm-hmm. I think this is where the crux of our problem is, mm-hmm. because everything tends to filter down on, well, if you want this done, you got to pay for this. And whereas on the bottom rung, we don't mind doing that, especially if it's going to impact you in the long run. But at least bring it to the forefront that we got at least consider what our contribution is going to be as we move forward. So again, in closing, CA and Aaron, I have to congratulate you guys because, you know, the discussions that you're having on your program right now, I am totally blown away with the contribution of your guests in studio right now. And I just would admonish them to continue to educate the Bahamian people publicly, even if it's through this forum, to continue to educate us, to be very sensitive, especially IAs and everything, that there are some things that we as average, normal, everyday citizens must take into account when we are doing certain things in our environment. Thanks for taking my call this morning. Continue the great work, and thank you for allowing me to really expand and express myself during this long diatribe that I've done this morning. Take care. God bless.
Absolutely. Thank you. Blessings. Yes, ma'am.
So I want to talk about what our right.
Okay, so let me respond to him
sorry,
quickly,
sir, my
and the caller. No. Very, very quickly, and to the caller before with a critique of the sort of governance process, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not critique the technocrats, the people who are working, right? I think the evidence is in the lack of policy created mm-hmm. after development, right? One development after the other, one process of engagement, of stakeholder contribution after the other, and we don't see any real policy changes occurring. For instance, not yet have I seen a law that says if you are paid to clear land or to clean beaches or to clean land, that you're required to have a basic environmental certification showing that you can identify protected trees, mm-hmm. protected animals, mm-hmm. endangered trees, mm-hmm. and important environmental areas, right? Mm-hmm. The second point I want to make quickly, another policy initiative that we haven't seen arise, Pat Ramming wrote a year ago, 2 years ago in a Tribune editorial, he talked about the EIA process, and I think he indicated that every project requires an environmental impact assessment. Not just major resorts, not just major developments, not just foreign direct investors, but every single project. And I would say government take this seriously. I cannot say that they do.
Yes, Aaron. Okay. I will laugh. I will say that I appreciate you pointing out that technocrats, or those who are in the government who are doing this work, graduate from school, you come back and you want to save the Bahamian environment. Mm-hmm. You're working in forestry. You're working in the Ministry of the Environment. You're working at the Geospatial Information Systems Center. We're doing our work. But there are some things, some policies that are not in place, some things that have not been enacted, things like the Freedom of Information Act that is only partially enacted. So things can be going on. You could have someone getting a deal with the government or something that we do not know about. And we cannot get the full details until they tell us in 1 month, we're going to have a presentation on the environmental impact of this development. Read this 500-page, 200-page EIA before then, send in your comments and questions, and we will respond within 30 days. There isn't any guideline or rule to say what exactly needs to be in the EIA, how it's supposed to be laid out. There's no regulation to say it has to be posted to this government website that every Bahamian can access. Mm-hmm. You can go to the DEPP website, and there are some EIAs there. Mm-hmm. This one is not one of them. So anyone can say, oh, we're going to make Goldwyn Resorts, but our EIA is actually on goldwyn242.com or .net or wherever they want to put it. And you cannot find these things. So those are some of the things that we need as Bahamians to advocate for us to know what's going on in our environment. And a lot of us, we just respond after someone start building something next to us. In Adelaide, they have Adelaide Pines now. Several different developments going on. Here in Grand Bahama, I'm going around and looking at all of the skeletons of these hotels that someone had a great idea a long time ago, and now it's a back house, a vulture house, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to have better accountability. And that includes educating people, and that includes making policy that says this information needs to be here and it needs to be available.
You made some really great points, and you're right. We have very, very talented people in technocrats like yourself, like Gail, people in depth, but it's the economics that tends to override a lot of the good work that you're doing. So one of the things that frightened me is that just the way we're tossed off when we ask questions. So even in town planning and in the EIA, I said, could I please see what the setback is? Could I please see this measurement? What is that measurement? And they don't answer your questions. And these are very important questions for us to ask and have to be answered, because it's going to affect our shores and it's going to affect our lives and the human impact. So Gail, if you could please just, or Dr. Davis, sorry, if you could please just once again, what is an example of a social issue, a economic issue, and of course we know what the environments are, because I think that's how they're going to catch you. We need to give that information
and
again.
To tag on to that, those questions in their media presentations, they say they promise 300 construction jobs and 30 jobs. And the question I ask is, does that economic value balance with the potential ecological and environmental impact of the project?
Go ahead, Ms. Woon. You tackle that.
So as far as social, I think one of the biggest impacts is going to be for those people trying to use Goodman's Bay Park, because that's open to everyone. No one should be limited from going to that beach and that area and enjoying that environment. And now you're telling me that there's no parking because of the previous development, and now they want to do this bigger development. And the EIA says they're only going to have 14 extra parking spots. But like you guys were saying, where are the construction workers going to park? Where are the people who work there going to park? Where are the guests going to park? Where are the people who want to go to Goodman's Bay going to park?
I'm concerned to know, Aaron, because I remember last construction where the construction workers parked. They park all along on the median
and in the road.
And
then you understand why a frustrated police just direct them to park at Goodman's Bay, right? Because the risk of them being on the median and in the road, now you're talking about the risk of accidents and lives being lost. The police are going to, mm-hmm. Move this car, park it wherever, Goodman's Bay, wherever. We need to have a policy put in place that advises the police where these people should be parking. And a parking area needs to be identified for their staff.
Whose job is it, though, Aaron, to protect the median?
It's the police's job. We're not mad at the police for that.
Spaces, Ministry of Works, Department of Road and Transport, the police is dealing with who's making U-turns. If they park on the median facing one way, where are they going to go when they pull off? Are they going to make a U-turn or whatever? But to get back to this social, economic, environmental space, this is how I teach my students in sustainability. You have to see sustainability, S-E-E. Socially, who are you impacting? Who's making the decisions? And then who has to live with the decision? So anything that happens around there, yeah, those people get to live inside their high rises and stuff. But every time they pull out onto that road or they have to pull into that road, the whole time that they're doing construction and you have big machines coming in and out of there, people working all hours of the day, stuff like that. When they decide they want to rake the beach or they want to treat the beach in a certain way, plant certain things and bring in some other plant species that they think looks tropical, that's affecting the environment, but we have to live with it. Economically, none of these developments make sense in New Providence. You're bringing in, $100 million, 300 employees, separated things. So every dollar what they give to the government that they're talking about, they paying the construction workers, the VAT, the NIB contributions, they wrap all of that is being wrapped up into that $100 million. And it actually doesn't go very far.
Let me ask you, you mentioned raking the beach. Surely raking the beach is a good thing. You got to clean the beach along the beach. Be glad that happening. But why would you mention that has an environmental impact?
Okay, I am against sand flies and mosquitoes, right? Mm-hmm. And raking the beach does disrupt the reproductive activity of sand flies, so it helps in that way. Depending on what you're using to rake the beach, they have machines that will collect all these little bottle caps and plastic bag and all that stuff that people leave on the beach. But at the same time, you do not have the chance for any of our native vegetation to grow there and to maintain a dune. We had the 100,000 tree planting initiatives that put all of these native plants, sea purslane, sea oats, sea grape, bay lavender,
Bejorino.
All of them that supposed to be on the beach. And we planted them out at Saunders Beach. And then the people who are hired by the government come and dug them up. So that's a government agency with Bahamians on staff. If you have someone else who has a totally different goal line, they just want people to be able to look out their window and see the ocean. They don't want none of our Bahamian trees and stuff out there.
So necessarily. Thank you again, Dr. Davidson. Thank you again, Ms. Gail Woon. But I want to speak to sum up with Ms. Azalita Ishmael Nuri, right? The objective of the Say No to Win campaign. And what about the answers to concerns? Is there any place for us to put forward answers and concerns?
Okay, so the Say No to Win campaign is available at www.saynotowinwynn.com. And on there are two PSAs, PSA 1, PSA 2, and all the concerns are there. You can do, there's some click-throughs. There's a form you fill out and make sure you state why you have the concern, whether it's social, economic, or environmental.
Right.
It has to be in by next week, Wednesday, March 20th, because that's what the Department of Environmental Protection and Planning wants.
Right. And it says your emails will go to, you can email DEPP, Department of Environmental Planning and Protection, inquiries at DEPP.gov.bs. Wynn's environmental consultant, Craig Russell & Associates, info@craigrussellassociates.com, and No Wynn campaign coordinator, Fight Wynn, that's WYNN at gmail.com. And you can find all of this info on the website.
We need to invite you back. We need to invite you back to go in detail.
Okay.
I want to clarify, you have to email all of them.
Okay. You have to
Don't email one or the other. You have to email all of them, and you have to make sure that that you copy all of them, because that makes them required to respond to your issues. And be succinct. Say specifically what your issue is, what type of response or what type of information you're asking.
And you can find all of these instructions at saynotowin.com.
And on their Facebook page.
Yes, this has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron Green. Thank you very much, Mrs. I already forget your name.
Azalita Ishmael Nuri.
Yes, have a wonderful day.